Right eye dominant.
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 This is the Right Eye Dominant Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Right Eye Dominant Podcast. I am your host, Nick Toro Jr., and today's episode is part two of an exploration of the city of Berlin via photo books. My episode last time was with Christian Reister and his book, Berlin Nights. Today's episode, I speak with photographer Jason Langer about his book entitled Berlin. And Jason's story is quite different from Christian's, and I'm excited to delve into his life in photography and then specifically the details of his book on Berlin. So to give a little bit of background before we get into the conversation, Jason Langer is an American photographer. He lives in Portland, Oregon. When he was a child, his parents divorced and his mother took him and his two brothers to live in Israel. And it was during this time that Jason Langer was first exposed to his family history and the history of Jewish suffering, specifically at the hands of the Nazis during World War II. Later, after he was pursuing his career in photography, it was suggested that he go to the city of Berlin to photograph. And it was at this time that Langer confronted his own personal biases and the challenges of documenting a place that stood for so much suffering of his the people of his faith. And so, up for the challenge, Langer pursued documenting Berlin and extensively traveled there and photographed, and it all results in this amazing book that he is putting out, simply titled Berlin. So that is the impetus for our conversation. I had not met Jason before we spoke, but he reached out to me, and all the elements just sort of fell into place. And so why not have two separate discussions about photo books set in a city that I truly love, Berlin, Germany. So that's the preamble. Without further ado, let's get into my conversation with photographer Jason Langer. Welcome to the Right Eye Dominant Podcast, Jason Langer.
Thanks for having me, and it's a great podcast, and I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Jason, thank you for reaching out to me and informing me about your upcoming release of your book. And so before we jump into the specifics of the book and the process, just to familiarize my audience with you and your journey to photography, why don't you just give a little, you know, bio introduction and more specifically, how did you end up working in photography?
So I was always interested in photography from the age of 12. And, you know, my first seventh grade photography class was magical. And then I just stuck with that through junior high and high school, which in my case, in my school, there was only the newspaper, the school newspaper, and stuck with that. But one day I was helping a friend of mine who was house sitting his mother's friend, and I walked in and there were these beautiful landscapes all over the house, and asked who that was. And we asked the person who he was house-sitting for, and she said, that is my sister, that is my brother-in-law, who was Michael Kenna.
Oh.
So Michael's first wife, Catherine, was her sister, had all these Michael Kenna prints. And I phoned Michael at the time, this was 1985, and said, how do I learn to make pictures the way you do? They're beautiful and haunting. And he said, I don't know where you would in the U.S., but stay in touch with me. And I did. And I went to University of Oregon and went to the photography program there, which is a great program, and stayed in touch with him. And when I graduated in 1989, he was ready to hire his first assistant. And I moved to the Bay Area and started working with him and made my own photographs. And he helped me edit them. And then eventually I met dealers and gallerists through him and learned the business itself, and eventually started having my own exhibitions and sales and books.
Wow, what a great opportunity to not only work with a master photographer, but also learn sort of the ins and outs of the fine art business at the same time.
Yeah, and I would say the biggest piece aside from the business was just the obsession involved, right? The amount of production that was being done and still is being done, I'm sure, in his studio. So, you know, the amount of constantly working, constantly photographing, constantly thinking about what the next obsession is and making something happen out of it and not just sitting on it. Yeah,
That's really interesting, especially, you know, you're coming out of school and jumping right into the real world where, you know, you in school maybe had professors or assignments thrown upon you and those deadlines. But now you're in the real world and it's just really comes down to you and your own motivations.
Yeah. And it really comes down to obsession because no one is asking you for these pictures.
Right.
Right. I mean, no one's asking you to make, you know, a personal statement about your vision of the world visually and photographically. You dig deep and you make it because you can't not do it.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, and you have to have that kind of dedication. And back then, as you know, as you remember, it took a lot more effort.
Yes.
And a lot more risk. Right. When you put film into your camera, you don't know what you're going to get and you go by your gut instinct. And then you have hours and hours and hours of film processing and contact sheets and RC prints, eventually making it to fiber prints and then matting and framing those pieces. The old method, right? Mm-hmm. It took a long, long time and a lot of dedication.
So are you still strictly a film photographer? Have you moved to digital?
I'm a hybrid photographer. I do a little of each. Some projects require film, others digital. I do pigment prints, which I think are amazing and in many ways way better than gelatin silver prints. And I also do gelatin silver prints. So I've taken the approach to just adapt and hybridize everything.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of your work, I want to just jump into just general, again, before we get to the book, and we will get to the book. But I spent a lot of time on your website, and the variety of subject matter I found actually a bit surprising as far as, you know, the different projects that you've done and actually coming to it. And full disclosure, I wasn't familiar with your work until I was looking at the Berlin book. But to see everything else that you've done, there's definitely, and I'm going to pull a quote from your website. His images are, as he puts it, the product of walking the streets alone as a stranger in a strange land. There seems to be, and maybe this also informs how you worked on the Berlin project, but that idea of that you're calling yourself a stranger in a strange land, I think that is applicable. I could apply that statement. It makes sense. Any of the bodies of work of yours that I'm looking at has that element to it. Can you talk a little bit more, tell me a little bit about what that means to you and how that informs your approach?
Yeah, I mean, it seems essential to photography in general, at least it always has been for me and everyone that I know that's involved in photography, is that it's solitary, right? You're photographing alone. You don't need a crew for the most part, unless you're Gregory Crutzen or someone like that. I mean, my best friend is a filmmaker, and you don't just go out with a camera and make a film, right? You have a whole lot of people that have to be involved in it. As a photographer, all you have is yourself. That's all you need. You know, and in the back in the day, your own dark room, and again, you spent time alone. And what has happened in photography is it's become social. It's become a way that we communicate with each other through sending pictures to each other, and the pictures are already embedded into our communication system, our phones. Mm-hmm. Right. But my experience with photography has always been that it's a solitary endeavor. And yeah. that going back to the idea that no one is asking me to take pictures, I'm doing it as my own expression and statement about my own experience of life. And to me, that's a private experience.
Yeah.
So it's always come back down to it being a private experience for me, photography.
Well, you know, it's your explanation was very, it's not complicated what you just said. And I think I 100% knew that already. But as you were saying that, and this is a diversion, but my own sort of thoughts about social media and how it, you know, it in many ways to my eyes degrades the value of photography because of the, you know, I maybe couldn't explain what it was that was bothering me about it until you just said sort of like this solitary pursuit and social media shifting it into it's all about sharing, or that it's a different mindset for something that many of us do consider a, like, yeah, I'm going out, I don't need anyone else, and I don't, and I think maybe that's part of the dilemma for me, or paradox of it.
Well, sure. And all of my projects, as you've seen, take years to create, right? When you dive deeply into a subject matter and you're trying to understand it and investigate it because you're curious about it and you want to know more about it and you've decided to make pictures about it, it takes years. It takes a long time. And that is the opposite of what social media and using photographs in a social kind of way is all about these days, right? Mm-hmm, the social media and the social stream in all different ways, whether it's websites or blogs or articles being written about you or podcasts, it's all happening extremely quickly. Mm-hmm. It's all asking for content. It's all mm-hmm. asking for pieces that you're working on that take years, mm-hmm. right? And so it's really the opposite. What is required now, or the way that photography is being used and distributed and asked for now, is really the opposite of my experience of photography. That if I want to know and I'm curious about something and I want to know it photographically, it takes a long, long time. And so it's a matter of how do you do both at the same time? How do you give little chunks out yeah. into the world where they want to know what you're doing, but you're also digging deep into a project that you know is taking a long time and is the opposite of what the rest of the world is requiring right now?
Right. Yeah.
It's hard to do both things at once.
Well, and maybe this is a good segue into the discussion of the Berlin book, because it touches on many of those elements that you just described, that, you know, the amount of time that work takes, but also the fact that it's, and I know I'm assuming that it's clearly not just in book form, it'll be exhibited, or I know that you do exhibit your work, but the sheer amount of time to produce this body of work, to give all of not only the physical dedication to the travel and the shooting, but the mental space required for contemplating what you're doing and why you're doing it, and then the editing process, or the working on each image, and then it comes into book form, which, as we discussed before I started recording, is a whole other timeline on its own. Great work does take time. And I think the book is you know, like a just a perfect example of that. So time-wise, let's talk about the entry point into this project. And I did read your biography and I read some background, but just for the listeners, tell me like how you came to this project and when it started.
So this project started in 2008. I was having an exhibition at the Michael Hoppen Gallery in London. And he said, you know, you should photograph Berlin because it has the kind of sensibility that I sense in your work. And when he said that, it brought me immediately to these feelings that I had about the city, what my impressions were about the city and about Germany in general. Going back to when I was a child growing up on a kibbutz in Israel in the 70s. So one of the things that made a huge impression on me when I was a kid, and I was there from 7 to 11 years old, really impressionable years, was going to the Holocaust Memorial every Holocaust Memorial Day, starting back in 1974. And we were asked to stand in silence as kids and remember those people who lost their lives, who were murdered, so that we could be in the land of milk and honey. Mm. And when you're having a great time as a kid and you're asked to stand in silence and remember all those people who died so that you could be there, it had a huge impression on me. And I kept with that. My mom died in 2018, and she left a bunch of books behind. And one of the books was The Wonderful Story of the Jews. And it was an illustrated book about the history of Israel, about the history of Jewish people, ending up in how Israel was formed and the kibbutzim were formed. And she bought that book when my parents divorced, and she decided to take my two brothers and I to live on a kibbutz in Israel. When I discovered that book, I realized there were a lot of illustrations and a lot of written pieces in it that also had a huge effect on me when I was a kid. And so when Michael Hoppen suggested that I photograph in Berlin, I was instantly struck with fear and this impression of, oh, Berlin is the heartbeat of the Nazis, mm-hmm. right? This is where the Nazis, this is where Hitler was, right? This is where he supposedly died in his bunker. And you know, this is where the first concentration camps began and where the final solution was decided. And this is going to be a really big deal. But when I arrived in Berlin, of course, you discovered that it's a modern city and there's mm-hmm. a whole lot of things and a whole lot of development of the city and its people that have happened since the war, right? 70, 80 years ago. And so I felt like it wasn't a research project. It wasn't a place for me to go find places where Jewish people lived, right? Or where, you know, important places where Jewish people congregated then. It was my personal impression of the city, which included what was and what is, how people are now and how they were. And I imagined myself walking where Jewish people were walking, right? I felt like a stranger in a strange land. And I was. I was a Jewish person walking in Germany, in Berlin, right? And I know that Germany has had a long campaign of trying to bring Jewish people back to Germany. Mm. And they've tried many different avenues of getting there. And I recognized my own Jewishness as I was walking the streets. So I took it as an opportunity to find a mixture, right? Photograph people on the street as they are now, two, three generations from the Holocaust, and ask them questions and find out if they are German and ask, look into their eyes and find their sort of decent humanity and get past this prejudice that I had when I was a kid about German people. And my mother used to make fun of German people, and her mother used to make fun of German people. Mm. And so in my mind as a child, I had that fear and I had that preconception. And so part of what I was doing when I was walking the streets was photographing people who are German and asking them basic questions and making portraits of them, going to important places for Jewish people, but also going to clubs, going to restaurants, walking the streets, coming across places that are interesting photographically, and later finding out that they were important for, say, they were deportation points for Jewish people who were deported to death camps. Being there and knowing that I felt compelled to visit the Stasi archives, mm-hmm. to go to the first death camp in the north, which is Sachsenhausen, but also try to get into Berghain, the famous, you know,
the
famous nightclub. I did not get in. So no surprise there. But I tried to include all of those places, yeah. right? Yeah. And the building that was a sort of squatter's art studio named Kunst Takeles, which I think is not there anymore, and walk up and down those stairs and photograph where the artists are squatting.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I tried to include it all. Now, what that did was, after 5 years of doing that, it created a massive archive of negatives. And by the way, the reason why I shot it all in black and white film is because I started the project in 2009. And in 2009, digital photography was not the way that it is today. Mm-hmm. I could not imagine blowing up a digital image and having it look beautiful as it's 40 by 50 or 50 by 60, right? It just didn't look good. It was not there. And so I did it all on black and white film. And as technology changed, I started to reach into digital photography, but that wasn't the case at the time. Mm-hmm. What ended up happening was I had a huge archive of negatives of all aspects that I could come up with for 5 years, 2 weeks of photographing at a time for 5 years, and decide, what do I have? What is this? How do I make it into something, whatever it's going to be? So I did make it into a book. The book has 176 pages and 145 images, I think. And I hired a great designer for it. And the exhibition turned into an exhibition of 27 prints. And that is a traveling exhibition called A Jewish Ode to the Metropolis. And that is on its way to Jewish and Holocaust museums. It opens this summer at Holocaust Museum Houston, July. Great. And then it moves on to the next museum after that. So there's a lot right there.
Yeah. So a couple of questions on that. So first, that traveling exhibit is pulled from this body of work that's in the book?
Yes, it is. And it's specifically about the Jewish aspect of it. It's not mm-hmm. so much about contemporary Berlin.
Yeah.
And the other thing that happened was the people that I was staying with then, I stayed in a flat with six or seven people that were constantly changing. And every time they would go away for a holiday, for a vacation, and Europeans take a lot of vacations, they would email me and they would say, I'm leaving for these 2 weeks and you're welcome to stay in my room, in my bed. And so I would. So I had a free place to stay. My rent to them was to cook dinner for them. So I would cook dinner every night. But they wanted nude photographs because at the time I was also doing a series of nudes. And so I would have this very interesting experience of being a Jewish person in Berlin, photographing difficult places in the history of Judaism for Germany, for Berlin, and then coming back in the afternoon and, say, doing nudes of one of my roommates. Mm. And so one of the main cruxes of the book was, how do those two things happen simultaneously, right?
Yeah.
How do you photograph a death camp where people were systematically murdered in the morning and then come back and do beautiful nudes of a 21-year-old, you know, beautiful, young-bodied person laying in his or her bed? And those two things happen at the same time in Berlin. It's just there.
Right.
Right?
Okay, so my one question then is, how do you do it? How did you emotionally navigate that?
Well,
very two different poles there.
Yeah, this was something that haunted me until the very last couple weeks before the book went to press. And that was, when you are dealing with the Holocaust, it stands on its own. There is nothing else that can interfere with that. It's so monumental that it takes up the entire room. Mm-hmm. It has to. Mm-hmm. However, there is a place after the Holocaust when life did return, right? When beauty and life and everyday life did return, there was a place, there was a time when that happened. And I found when you mix those two things together, atrocity, horror, murder, with beauty, eroticism, and life, and potential, and joy, those two things are very, very difficult to put together. I tried in the best that I could to put those two things together in my book, and that is to show that in Berlin, it is all happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. It is all there, right? There was the division of the city between East and West. There was murder and deportations in the streets. But before that, there was also the Weimar Republic, a right. great opening of culture and sex and music and the roaring 20s before the Nazis came in. And so when you're walking around photographing Berlin, all of that is happening all at the same time.
Yes.
Right? And so I felt like it was my responsibility to try to tell as whole of a picture as I could, but give tremendous space and respect to the Holocaust, right? Because yeah. it demands it.
Yeah.
And so the book ended up being a personal experience of me walking through the city, and it is organized geographically from west to east, with the major pieces being about the Holocaust and what happened there, with these very small little vignettes of these openings of joy and youth and creativity and sex that mm-hmm. happen, that are all happening all at the same time. And that in Berlin, this is where they all come together in the center of Europe.
Right.
And I knew that I had to get writers who would write this in a way that the pictures perhaps were too opaque to say. So I got Bill Cowenhoven, who has lived in Berlin for 30 years, who's American, but he's lived there all that time. And he's written about Berlin a lot. And then I also felt that I needed the voice of a Jewish resident. So I found Shelley Kupferberg, who was born in Tel Aviv, but grew up and has lived the rest of her life in Berlin, to write about how everywhere you go in Berlin as a Jewish person, you can't help but feel Jewish ghosts. Mm-hmm. He talks about when you're walking through a flea market and you're seeing, you know, candlesticks. Were those owned by Jewish people, and those candlesticks or that painting or whatever it was confiscated, right? And that there are these certain places in Berlin that you know that horrible things happened, right? Yeah. Murder and destruction happened. And as a Jewish person, you know that as you're walking through the city. And so I wanted to get those voices that would speak that in words to go along with the photographs themselves.
Yeah. And I was reading those texts, and it definitely rounds out or brings another layer of just insight into what you were doing photographically. I think also you touched on something that has struck me about and I love Berlin. I've got no personal history attached to it, other than that I'm fascinated by the complexity of its history and a lot of the things that you're talking about. And then certainly from a cultural standpoint, the artistic traditions of, you know, certainly the Weimar, and then, you know, the sort of the reassembly of a creative capital after the war, and then also the struggles of German people to reconcile their history. And I know through a lot of art and a lot of cinema that is just, it's a recurring theme. And like you said, it's like when the Holocaust, it takes up the room, and it has to. It's not, you can't minimize it. You can't ignore it. You're not always showing it, but it's part of the story nonetheless. And so now imagining your personal experience with your family history, and then coming to a place that in your mind represented all sorts of negative things, negative realities, negative histories, and navigating that, and knowing that, like you said, and I'm aware of it every time I'm there, it does feel like there's ghosts around you. And whether, you know, that's due to the history of World War II, or certainly even before that. But then if you think about the, you know, Berlin being cut in half, and the Cold War, and East and West, and all of that happening, it's just like one thing after another creates this place that's just so unique that it has to reconcile with such a challenging past. And then at the same time, like you said, there's life, there's art, there's celebration, there's sex, and so against that backdrop, as compared to many places in the world that don't have that charged environment.
Yeah, and also while I was editing the book, I also recognized that this is not a documentary project, mm-hmm. right? This is in no way objective. This is, every photograph that I took was a subjective experience. It was a subjective picture that I was painting. And so when it really comes down to it, it's that the book and the exhibition is an expression that only I could do. Mm-hmm. And that if a documentary photographer did it, they would do it in a much more comprehensive and objective way, which is not how I photograph. And so, as with most things that I do, it's a hybrid. Mm-hmm. It's a hybrid of being part documentary, part personal statement. And then in terms of the nudes, I had all of these nudes that I did of these roommates over a 5-year period of time. And the question was, do I integrate them or not? What I ended up doing is only including a few very subtle backs of people to suggest that eroticism is there happening at the same time, but not do it overtly. Mm-hmm. And those pictures are actually going to be shown at the Clamp Gallery in New York in May as its own exhibition. So I will separate them and take them out of the whole Jewish and Holocaust environment and give them their own time and space. Mm. So I'm very happy to be doing that.
There's a lot of logic, I think, to that. And I'm familiar with the Clamp Art Gallery, and know that just from their, you know, their MO, that work falls squarely in their purview as well. So, which is great. And I think that, you know, you said something else that, you know, it's not a documentary project. It is, you know, totally subjective. Also, it's valuable for viewers to realize that without your history, without your family history, or your fears, or your perspective, or whatever it is, would have made very different work, do make very different work if they go to the same, you know, same location. And I think that's also the value for this episode, is talking to two different people of their two different, you know, bodies of work about Berlin. And also, I think it's fitting because of, like I said earlier, this sort of division between East and West, between murder, death, nightlife, sexuality, all of that creates a very, it would make it a very difficult project to pursue without some kind of personal perspective on it. And I think a sort of like a more unbiased documentary kind of approach would just, where's the sort of the substance to the emotional substance to it?
Yeah, and when I teach photography, and I've been teaching consistently since 1998, I'm always encouraging students, photography students, to come at their subject matter from a subjective perspective, which in some ways is inevitable. It's going to happen anyway, but I'm encouraging them to dig in deep because that is where their work is going to be separated from everybody else's work. And I think that subjective perspective, even though the camera is in many ways inherently, supposedly objective, there's no way you can take a photograph without it being a subjective image. And I encourage students to just dig into that. And the Berlin Project is a good example of how there was no other way for me than to photograph from a subjective point of view.
Well, maybe that's a good place for us to wrap up this conversation then. Jason Langer, thank you so much for taking time out and joining me on the podcast. It was really a pleasure to meet you and talk with you.
Thank you very much for having me.
So there you go, folks, my conversation with photographer Jason Langer, all about his journey into photography and more specifically, his book, Berlin. I will most certainly share links to Jason's website, as well as his Instagram account, and certainly a link to where you can purchase the book, Berlin. It is really beautiful work and really beautifully produced, and a lot of thoughtful commentary writing in there as well. So I think it would be a great addition to your photo book library. If you have any questions or comments about today's episode or any other episode, you can reach me via my website, righteyedominantpodcast.com. There's a section down at the bottom where you can leave me a comment and send me your message, and I'd love to hear from you all. Also, as always, I ask if you could leave me a rating or a review on the podcast platform of your choice. Most specifically, the Apple Podcast platform. That would go a long way to help me continue to grow this podcast. It's been my pleasure to be with you today and look forward to you joining me next time. So that's it for today. This has been the Right Eye Dominant Podcast. I've been your host, Nick Toro Jr., and until next time, stay well. This podcast is a production of righteyedominant.art. The music and sounds for this episode are courtesy of The Conant Project, The Free Music Archive, and Yazar.